Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation.
You are a human animal. You are a very special breed. For you are the only animal who can think, who can reason, who can read.
Hello and welcome to Bookworm. This is Michael Silverblatt, and this week I'm very pleased to have as my guest Carl Phillips, whose most recent book, The Tether, has been published by Farrar, Straus & Giroux. His previous works, Pastoral, which was nominated for the LA Times Book Prize, comes from Grey Wolf, as do From the Devotions and Cortege. His first book was In the Blood. And I wanted, I guess, to go about this in a sort of roundabout way. The first thing I saw when I started reading your poetry was a quote from Juno Barnes's Nightwood. And that is, the unendurable is the beginning of the curve of joy. I'm a great lover of Juno Barnes. Mm-hmm. And it seemed to me that what I found in the book was an interest in a syntax like Juno Barnes's that would wind and, in a sense, disappear, that one is following very intently imagery and argument through the rabbit hole into something beyond sense.
Mm-hmm. I suppose, I don't know if that comes from Juno Barnes, but it does seem to be something that's characteristic of the way I write. And increasingly, someone was saying that the poems seem to hover over their own dissolution. And I'm not sure why that is. For me, the way that I write lines is probably most informed by my study of Greek poetry, ancient Greek poetry. And as you know, much of that comes to us in fragments. So the idea of dissolution doesn't seem a strange thing to me. And in those poems, especially something like Archilochus or Sappho, there is an intensity, an emotional intensity, that just breaks off often. And I don't think it was a conscious thing, but that's the only thing I can really think to point to. That and the sort of sentences of Roman writers like Tacitus or for something in English, the sentences of Henry James, late Henry James, things like that, it's almost as if the mind itself is sorting out where it wants to get to.
Now, metaphysical poetry seems an mm-hmm. influence as well, especially yes. in the most recent book, even in title, it mm-hmm. seems to recall George Herbert.
Yes, that's true. I somewhat recently came to metaphysical poetry. Well, as in 92, I studied with Geoffrey Hill. I took a course on the poetry of religion, it was called. And I had read George Herbert and John Donne, people like that, but I'd never studied them and never read more than the few anthologized poems that there are. And it seemed to me that it was not unrelated to the sort of... Theirs is more, at first it seems, a spiritual wrangling. But I had always thought of my own poetry as a spiritual wrangling, even though it was about the body in large part. And I didn't see why the two couldn't be together. And to find in writers like Donne especially, but also in George Herbert, where George Herbert seems very much to acknowledge that there's a place for doubt and for whatever the definition may be for him of sin, as if how could we recognize a different way to be if we didn't fall away from it almost periodically. And that seemed to me a sensibility that was very akin to my own. So yes, it has seemed a way to get to a kind of poetry that can see the sexual and the spiritual as being twinned in some way.
But your poems do tend to move further in the direction of a kind of anguishing sadomasochism, which brought to mind Juna Barnes as well.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I can't deny that, although it's come as a bit of a surprise to me. I think that so much is about restraint and release. And when I teach prosody, I speak a lot about that to students in terms of, oh, I don't know, something such as if there's a controlling device in a poem, the meaningful surprise that can come out of walking away from that controlling device, that to me is sort of having a restraint and then releasing the reader from it, but at unexpected moments. That seems to me a fairly ordinary way to look at the relationship between form and content, but it has occurred to me that that's also part of the psychology, I think, of sadomasochism and, a kind of a manipulation and the degree to which pleasure is about degrees of, and as is pain, about degrees and what one's accustomed to and how there's a shift from what might be what one's accustomed to. I guess I'm agreeing with you.
I thought I would ask you to read the title poem from the new collection called The Tether.
Okay. Small release, bird, risen, flown. I woke all but weightless, himself the weight exactly of eclipse. If the tree looked like insisting upon falling, I'd let it fall. Should you use force and the forcing give your skin a red cast as of light to a night sky by which to know there lies somewhere a towndom, I'll find the town, enter. A piece of the wall, a tower, refused for a time fire and then burned. Raise a glass, grave a stone to it. Darkest room, from lightlessness, how slow, homing back. What required? When expect to? As across a distance like the one between this space and that of God, no measuring touches quite, except it fail. Now he is standing over me, and now I have laid my body on his own.
Carl Phillips reading the title poem from The Tether. Now, when you say that this emergence of an alignment between devotional poetry and sadomasochism came as something as of a surprise to you, what do you mean?
Well, I guess the thing is, well, it's not a surprise when I think about it in terms of its the logic. The logic to me of devotion is, in terms of spiritual devotion, is a sort of one directional abandoning or giving up of the self to a power acknowledged as not only greater but potentially destructive to the very self that one is giving up to, this force. That to me is, that's what prayer is, that would be what devotion would be. But it also is, it doesn't even have to be sadomasochism. It seems to me that's also what it is to give oneself up sexually in a real honest way. And I think that's what love is to be able to do that. So it's not, I guess, that surprising that sadomasochism is there, except that I don't really think of my poems as being sadomasochistic. And at the same time, I think, well, isn't that what it is to apprentice oneself to something potentially destructive and to want some acknowledgement from that greater force? And I think if one is truly devoted, the idea is supposed to be, at least in spiritual circumstances, that one is supposed to accept whatever comes down upon one. But that's a strange that's part of what was behind the book From the Devotions, because I just then was starting to think about how the attitude of prayer can be the attitude of, it can be a sexual position as well. And so it's one thing to give oneself up entirely to, say, God, but what about if one makes a God of, say, the anonymous stranger, and gives oneself up not so much the soul but the body? Then it seems a lot more problematic.
The line between devotion and sexuality becomes a kind of dark pun, especially in the poems in The Tether, where the language of sadomasochism is literally invoked, sir. And
yes.
And I wondered, did you have an anxiety of how far to go?
No. But that's because I'm not usually as aware of these things when I'm doing them. I sometimes, the book where I feel I sometimes think I've gone too far is Cortege. Later it seemed to me a very graphic, sexually graphic book. And I suppose there's nothing wrong with that, but I hadn't been aware of it until the book came out, and that was the shocking thing that was written about. And in The Tether, it seemed to me it was a very quiet book, but I wrote it rather quickly, and it's still sort of just coming to me now that I guess it does go to some dark edge, but I guess I think that nothing comes really until one's pushed past into the darkness. And I mean, whether it's about devotion or whether it's with, I mean, it's the mystery. It's not, to me, it's not the obvious and apparent that is exciting in a relationship, but it's the mystery of what is beyond what's seeable right now. And I feel that way about language as well. The idea that maybe this can't be done, so do it and see what happens.
You're listening to Bookworm. My guest is Carl Phillips. His most recent collection is The Tether from Farrah Straus, and before it, Pastoral from Grey Wolf Press. Now, I bring this up because in a certain sense, what's going on at the same time is a thought process that evacuates the self. And to some extent, the arising of sexual images seems, in a sense, in default. It's easier for a reader to clutch onto the arrival of a sexual language in the wake of a self-devastated language. And it seems to me that in a certain way, it's not that one is stronger than the other, it's that one is easier to talk about.
That may be, and maybe that's why, maybe that's why people do talk. Do you mean people who are speaking about the poems?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and that was part of what bothered me with the book Cortege, because I did not see it. Although there is graphic sex in it, I saw it as being somewhat. The book opens with a poem called "The Compass," and all of the images in it are. They're of martyrs. They're symbols of various Christian martyrs. And I meant that to sort of reinforce the Juno Barnes notion that a kind of suffering is the thing that once it happens, it gets transcended and that becomes something that might approximate joy. If you think of martyrdom as leading to joy, and it's one form, I suppose, of joy. And I guess, but I think that people did find it, and do find it maybe easier to latch on to the sexual. I think that might be a thing just in America, in American culture, that Puritan nervousness.
Well, let's hear the compass first.
You know? Okay. The compass. A star, dog with torch in its mouth, a finger ring, but no finger, broken cup, What is lonely? The single breast the beehive resembles, a pair of breasts on a dish. What else comes in pairs? Tongs, forceps, a key crossing a key, the cross but recumbent or knocked over, what is called the cross saltire, T turned on its side, X, that one and that one and what stands for? Gridiron for the having been roasted alive, a ship's windlass for around what the intestine pulled out into the salt air was bound fast. What flies? A raven, a winged lion, a winged ox, a man, but with wings, an arrow. What is lovely? An arrow. That other image, too, the one of an arrow at the end, is, for me, that has been symbolic, I suppose, of the constant hunger to attain, to hit at some target. But what if you can't identify what the target is? But people have very much thought arrow, phallic symbol, which I suppose an arrow is, but that hadn't occurred to me at the time.
Well, the poem seems to me to be incredibly beautiful. Is that an inappropriate?
That's what I would like it to be, and partly on the level of sound and a kind of collage of images. And it's great if one knows that these are martyrs, then that says something. If one is making a compass out of martyrs, then that says something about the direction this person has in mind. But I like to think it can be enjoyed even if there's not that information.
Now, throughout the poems, there have been 5 books so far, there are certain recurring, not just images, but recurring words. For instance, in that poem, the word recumbent appears, and there's a poem by that title. And, of course, more available things, the appearance in the last several books, sort of an emergent figure of a stag.
Yeah.
And I wondered about, are those beginning places, or do they reemerge in poems? Are they talismanic? What is the nature of the recurrence?
It came out of something quite ordinary. I live across from a large park in St. Louis, and I suppose it may be known to everyone else that parks, city parks, are the scene of anonymous sex, but I had no idea of that. And it was strange. Driving along once, a man sort of leapt out of the brush. And my first thought was, it was as if a deer had leapt out. That's what I'm more accustomed to seeing, leap out of brush. And then the idea that, I guess, of the hunt, and the hunt for sexual gratification in a woodland setting seems to have been, I think that's where it came out of. I know it is. I was fascinated with this whole idea of what was going on in the park. And I think the part of probably what led me to think of stags and all of that is I do have a real, I guess, fondness for the Aeneid, for the eclogues, for Virgil's work, and there are many hunt scenes. And also, I remember that there was, I believe it's St. Eustace, who while hunting, had a deer leap towards him, and there was a cross between the antlers. And so somehow it's become a symbol that has been able to contain the idea of spiritual charge, the possibility for sexual gratification, but also the idea that what was interesting to me was that my first reaction was to try to poeticize this guy. And then I thought, but that's not what it is. It's a person, a potentially dangerous person in the woods. It's not something in a poem. And that's very much what led to the poems in Pastoral, because it made me think about the ways in which we deceive ourselves to get ourselves through or justify certain kinds of behavior.
And would you choose one to read?
Sure, sure. Hymn, H-Y-M-N. Less the shadow than you a stag sudden through it. Less the stag breaking cover than the antlers with which crowned. Less the antlers as trees leafless to either side of the stag's head than between them the vision that must mean surely rescue. Less the rescue, more always the ache toward it. When I think of death, the gleam of the world darkening, dark, gathering me now in, it is lately as one more of many other nights figured with the inevitably black car. Again, the stranger's strange room entered not for prayer, but for striking prayer's attitude, the body kneeling, bending, until it finds the muscled patterns that predictably, given strain and release, flesh assumes. When I think of desire, it is in the same way that I do God. As parable, any steep and blue water, things that are always there, they only wait to be sounded. And I, a stone, that a little bit, perhaps, should ask pardon. My fears, when I have fears, are of how long I shall be falling, and am I at last resting, how indistinguishable, inasmuch as they are countless, sire, all the unglittering other dropped stones.
Carl Phillips, reading hymn from his collection Pastoral, which was nominated for an LA Times Book Award. This is Michael Silverblatt, and you're listening to Bookworm. My guest is Carl Phillips, the author most recently of a collection of poetry called The Tether from Farrar, Straus, and Giroux. Now, a couple of years ago, I got a certain reaction of incredulity when I had written about certain transgressive fiction, Dennis Cooper in particular, mm-hmm. as having a spiritual essence, and not just essence, but raison d'etre. Mm-hmm. And the response was surprise, not because of the level of violence in the work, but rather they were surprised that someone wanting to write about spirituality would choose such extremity as the vehicle of expression. Mm-hmm. Can you comment about that? Because it seems to be a facet, at least, of what you're doing as well.
One of the things I like about George Herbert's only book of poems, The Temple, is that he alternates. He'll have poems that are all... He'll have, for example, a poem about it's wonderful to go to church on Sunday and isn't it wonderful and I feel lots of joy. It's a big paraphrase of his wonderful poems. And I never buy those poems. I read them with a certain amount of impatience. And then just when he's written about that, he'll write about agony, the agony of questioning the very God for whom he's supposed to be going to church, he would say. And to me, that's the more spiritual moment, the moment where the soul cries out and is more vulnerable. And to so I don't know what would be considered spiritual poetry if one were to do an anthology, but I would imagine such an anthology would be one that would frustrate me, because mm-hmm. I don't think that the way that one can come up with any kind of devotion is through pleasant experience. It seems to me that it's the difficult that leads to some deepening of thought that might lead to a meditation on what might lie behind our experience. Is there anything motivating it? And so it doesn't seem... I will admit that Dennis Cooper's novels shock me, But I see them as spiritual as mm-hmm. well. And yes.
And I'm not trying to suggest to listeners who don't yet know the poetry that your poems are shocking in that way. It's just that their postures of adoration are so genuine, it seems to me, that when the subsidiary figures of sexual abasement and exhilaration of that kind occur, mm-hmm. they seem in their way as shocking because of the exalted context.
I think there's sort of an easy optimism to people who say, well, you know, you meet someone, you fall in love, and if you truly love them, you stay with them forever, and there's never any swaying or temptation. I don't believe there's not any temptation. And in fact, I don't think I'm willing to believe that somebody truly loves me until they've had the opportunity not to and resisted it, or perhaps have given way and then regretted it. But I think that those aren't damnable behaviors. They're in fact things that make for a stronger, to me, a stronger relationship, which is not to say that I'm advocating that people should rampantly have affairs or anything like that. I just think that to be so naive as to think it's not, that there's not an animal part to being human that works by instinct, that kind of naivete is frustrating and probably dangerous, because it's only going to lead to disappointment. Whereas I think the more useful way, perhaps, if not better, is to think of disappointment as woven into experience, because it is. So whether one acknowledges it or not is a different story. But I think that my poems encompass both things. And I think that if there's a vulnerability or a sense of devotion in the poems, it partly comes out of earlier in the poems there having been some testing, some travail.
I've been speaking to Carl Phillips, the author most recently of The Tether, a collection of poems published by Farrar, Straus & Giroux. The previous book was Pastoral, published by Grey Wolf Press. And I'm very pleased. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you very much for having me.
My associate producer is Melinda Siegel. The engineer today at the Los Angeles Times Festival of Books is J.C. Swadek. Special production assistance from Alan Howard. I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next week on Bookworm.
To the jungles you can go in books.
Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. This program is made available to the public radio system by SAS, a satellite service of KCRW Santa Monica. Cassette copies of this and other Bookworm programs are available. For ordering information, call KCRW at 310-450-5183.
Make you laugh and sing. Books tell you everything. They're your treasure, friends in prose and rhyme.
Now it's book of the mouse. Wow.